episode of the Stumbled Upon podcast. I am your host, Kate, and each week we will be taking a deep dive into a random topic that has sparked my interest. Happy Friday, everybody. I hope that you are looking forward to the weekend ahead. And this week's topic is a little bit strange, and there is a little bit of a wind-up to it. So we're talking about butterflies. And I know that that is seemingly random, but just bear with me. So in honor of spring coming soon, hopefully it's arriving soon for wherever you live, today's topic was inspired by a trip that I went on last year. So I had the privilege of going on a yoga retreat last October to a city in Mexico, and it was so much fun. It was my second year going with my yoga studio, and you know, it's just, if you have the opportunity to travel, I just highly encourage it. I think it's really great to travel within the United States, if that's where you are currently. But I also think it's important to travel to new countries as well. I have been fortunate enough to have traveled across the Atlantic into Europe. I have gone to several countries over there, and it was just wonderful and magical, and I cannot wait to go back someday. And I have also been able to take a couple trips, like I said, to Mexico, which has also been great and really eye-opening. As far as the perception goes, I think in the United States, we are conditioned to have a certain viewpoint of Mexico as a country, and I really encourage you to go if you've never been and experience it for yourself and just see how, you know, at the end of the day, we're all just people trying to live our lives. Do you know what I mean? So if you can have the exposure to a new place and a new culture, I would recommend it simply because it is fun and exciting and interesting, and also maybe an opportunity to learn something about a whole new group of people that you wouldn't have known previously. So anyway, that's my travel soapbox. Getting back to the story. So I was in Mexico, like we said, for this yoga retreat. And it being a yoga retreat means that it was very like woo-woo, okay? So there was a heavy element of like woo-woo to it, if you know what I mean, if you're catching my drift. One of the things that I did, and you didn't have to participate on this trip, you could participate in whatever you wanted to participate in. So if you wanted to do the yoga sessions, you could. If you didn't want to do them, you didn't have to. They also offered additional services while we were there. So different people would come in and do, you know, like massage or like Reiki healing or like breath work, meditation sessions, that kind of thing. One of the other things that they offered was a shaman would come and visit and do like a healing sort of energy reading kind of session. And I saw him the first year that I went because I was really intrigued by it. And then I went again and saw him this second time that I went. One of the things that he mentioned while we were in our session was that he saw a blue butterfly. And I haven't really done too much of a deep dive into that imagery and like maybe what it could mean and stand for. But it just so happened that later on during this trip, I was in a local bookstore because I am addicted to books. I have a whole shelving system in my house that is slowly but surely filling with books because I just have a love of reading and learning, and that hasn't become abundantly clear during these episodes of this podcast, then I'm telling you now that I'm just a nerd, okay? That's what it is. And I like to learn new things, and I like to read books of various genres and topics. And one of the books that caught my eye while I was in this bookstore is called The Fallen Stones, and it's written by Diana Markham. On the cover of it is a large blue butterfly. And so I thought, maybe I'll just pick this up and see what this book is all about. And I'm really glad that I did. And I would recommend reading it if you come across it, or you know, decide that that's something that you're interested in, because it's a really interesting story about this woman, Diana, who went on a trip to the rainforest of Belize and ended up staying there for quite some time and learning about how this sanctuary raises rare butterflies for different zoos and botanical gardens and things that are world worldwide, this particular location breeds these butterflies. And it's really interesting how they do it. So basically, it's a butterfly farm. And what they do is they breed these butterflies. And when they are in, and it's really specific timing for everything. So when they are in their larval stage, they have a certain amount of time before they emerge, when they're in the chrysalis, before they emerge as butterflies, right? Okay, so going back to like elementary science, you have a caterpillar and then it makes a chrysalis, which is that thing that it, like the little casing that it spins around itself. And then while it's in the chrysalis, it turns into mushy goo and then it rebuilds itself into a butterfly or a moth, depending on what it is. Okay, so when they're in that chrysalis stage, there is a really specific amount of time when this farm can transport them, you know, worldwide. And it's really precise because if the shipping times get delayed or there's any kind of like situation, then they'll die. And so it's a very precise procedure, but it is so interesting to see her stay at this farm and really get to experience it firsthand and how much the people that work at this farm and around the area really care about butterflies and just the environment in general and maintaining a respectful relationship with it. And I have some mixed feelings about zoos and things like that. When I was in college, I worked at an aquarium. I really enjoyed it and I learned a lot. And I was in the education department. And so I did the shows that they have during the day, like at aquariums, you know, about various whatever animals or exhibits that the facility has. And it was really fun because it got me in front of people and kind of honing my public speaking skills. And also it was an opportunity for me to give knowledge to others, kind of like this podcast, actually, that maybe they wouldn't otherwise get. And it was a really fulfilling job. I really enjoyed it. Now, I say all of that to say one of the things that they teach you when you work in a place like that is that your language is very important. So you don't say things like cage or similar words like that. You say things like enclosure or habitat or things like that, because you don't want people to have, like, cage, for example, has a negative connotation to it, right? And you don't want people to feel that way about the animals that are in captivity, because they are. I mean, that's, at the end of the day, you have wild animals that are normally in potentially much larger environments in the wild in a much, much smaller location. This is where my mixed feelings come in, right? Because I'm like, on the one hand, I so greatly admire the hard work that a lot of zoos and aquariums put into conservation efforts and teaching people. And it's important to have these exhibits and these animals so that you can see them in real life and maybe connect with them in real life and understand the importance of preserving our natural environments. But then on the other hand, you know, a part of me feels bad, you know, because you have animals that are, like I said, normally in much larger environments. Like, you know, we had sharks at the aquarium, right? And a shark is used to the ocean and they were in a tank. And it's one of those things where I can see both sides of people's feelings about it, because I too kind of have an internal struggle with how I view them. I think at the end of the day, though, where my standing comes down is that as long as the facility is treating the animals with the utmost respect and kindness that they can, then I think it's important for people to be able to connect with animals that you wouldn't normally get to see or connect with, and just have that sense of pride in preserving the space for these creatures. So that's sort of like my rant about that. Getting back to the topic, which is butterflies. So zoos get their butterflies from a variety of sources. It just depends on the zoo. So some of them will hatch them themselves. Some of them will feature native species, and then some will purchase species from farms like Fallen Stones. And they are usually exotic varieties when they're importing them from other places. Like, obviously, this farm is in the rainforest, so it's going to have more exotic species, right? So where do butterflies come from? Like, what is their history? According to a paper published in May of 2023, scientists previously thought that butterflies evolved with plants and dispersed due to geological events. However, However, after sequencing the genes from 2,300 species from 90 different countries, they discovered that their origin is only from about 100 million years ago. They evolved from nocturnal herbivore moth ancestors. All but one family was present after the KPG extinction. And for those of you that don't know, I had to look this up. It's the mass extinction that occurred about 66 million years ago, and it killed 80% of animals, including the dinosaurs. So all of the families of butterflies, except for one, were present before it. I wonder how many survived it. Well, obviously they all survived it because they have them now, right? Okay, so glad we worked that out. So all but one family was present before the extinction event. So that means that they've all come after the extinction event, right? Which was surprising to scientists. They said that most butterflies are specialists, which means they feed only on one larval host plant. And this is why it is so, so, so important for people to understand that you cannot just plant a flower and assume that you're going to save the butterflies, right? They are very specific to what plants they can get their nutrients from. 67.7% of butterfly species will feed on a single plant family, and 94.2% of generalists, which are the butterfly species that feed on several different plants, will only feed on plants that are significantly closely related. So they may be quote unquote generalist feeders, but they're barely generalist feeders. A story from the book that I thought was really interesting was about a worker who followed this super rare butterfly for months and months and months. He would see it and he would try to follow it where it went, and he would lose it, or he like couldn't go, you know, as far as it was going, or whatever the case may be. And then he finally tracked down the host plant for that butterfly because they could not figure out what plant it was feeding off of. So it was one of those species that is a specialist butterfly species, and they couldn't successfully breed it within their program without knowing what plant that it used. So it took him forever, and then it was this big breakthrough moment when he actually like found, and like literally he's just traipsing through the jungle following a butterfly trying to find the plant that it's going to eat, and also, you know, not run into any dangerous situations himself like in the jungle. That's another thing they talk about in the book, was the, you know, big cats and things like that that you need to be worried about, and like poisonous spiders and bugs and all of that kind of thing. Like, they can't use, you know, pesticides or things like that on the farm because the butterflies are too sensitive. So they just have to sort of figure out ways around these other animals and insects. And it was really interesting how much compassion they had for even the poisonous things, because they were like, they're all part of the ecosystem. You know, they all are part of this whole system that sustains itself. And I thought that was an interesting take on it. I personally still hate spiders, and if you come in my house, you're dead. But, you know, that's a very Western kind of idea. Maybe. I don't know. It is what it is. So the thing that these scientists figured out when they were studying these different species, this 2,300 species of butterflies, is that they actually originated in the Americas and then dispersed outwards from there, whereas the mammal dispersal pattern was in the opposite direction. Butterfly origin and diversification lagged far behind the origin of flowering plants. So butterflies originated 100 million years after the origin of plants. So again, they did not evolve together. However, their relationship is incredibly intertwined nowadays. So why do we care about butterflies? They are indicators of biodiversity. Many butterflies and moths will indicate many other invertebrates present as well. They also have a fragility that makes them quick to react to change. They struggle from habitat loss, weather and climate changes, and also pollution. So they are an indicator of the health of the overall environment. They also are pollinators, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And then they're prey for birds and bats and things of that nature. So they are also part of the food chain. They're an integral part of the food chain. So I did also look up why pollinators were important, because I think that we hear a lot about, you know, save the bees and that kind of thing. And while that is completely valid, we also need to remember that there are other pollinators as well and why they're important. And also, just as a side note, this was something that I learned when I was working at the aquarium. Again, there are species that are called Okay, I couldn't remember what they were called, so I wanted to look it up to make sure I was not misspeaking. So they are charismatic species. Those are the species that are focused on because they are appealing to the general population, and conservationists can use this appeal to get people to be more inclined to practice good environmental policies. So think like dolphins, otters, tigers, elephants, butterflies, bees, things that we think are cute are usually a charismatic species. So if you think about it, you know, if I asked you what you were more likely to initially respond to between a butterfly and a scorpion, which one do you think would draw more people caring about it? And it's the butterfly, right? Because it's pretty. That's not to say that these other species have no value or anything at all, but it is sort of using the psychological aspect of these charismatic species to get people to want to invest in conservation movements and efforts and things like that. Other pollinators besides butterflies and bees include ants, bats, beetles, birds, flies, moths, wasps, etc. So there are also some large pollinators. Think like mammals that will be rooting around in plants and then the pollen gets stuck on their fur and then they inadvertently pollinate, you know, other plants around the area. So that would technically be a pollinator as well. But when I'm talking about pollinators, I'm talking about more of the things that you think of, like bees and butterflies and ants, that kind of thing. Of the 1,400 crop plants worldwide where our food supply and plant-based industrial products come from, 80% require pollination. So it's really important. And I know that, you know, because it's not in our face as much, maybe with a food supply and that kind of thing, we don't really think about too heavily, I think, how important things like keeping pollinators around is. And it's so important because if the pollinators were to die off, then the plants that require pollination would be one generation away from complete disaster. They are so heavily dependent on each other that it is so important that we take the time to really kind of think about what we're doing with the land around us. You know, I understand the need for progress and I understand the need for, you know, housing and infrastructure and things like that. I am not against that. I just think that there is a way to do it that preserves as much of our land and species of plants and animals as possible while also developing for humanity. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the problem actually that we have in us versus them mentality, where it should be how can we all work together type deal, you know? How can we incorporate more native species of plants and biodiversity into things like our flower beds and our lawns and our local green spaces, just having places like that? How can we integrate that into our society in a way that benefits us, you know, because we're keeping these species alive and we're helping maintain that food chain. But then also, you know, it's cyclical. Like, we're all enmeshed together, right? So the plants need the pollinators and we need the plants. So it's just all interconnected. And I think it's important to remember that and realize that truthfully. So I've said all of this to say, what are small ways that we could help to keep the butterfly populations healthy and by extension populations of the other pollinators healthy? So the article that I read pointed out a few different things that we can do. One being plant local native host plants. So doing a little bit of research on your area and what plants are native to your area will go a long way. If you plant local plants, then their pollen and nectar is available for the local species of animals and insects. So you can plant exotic plants for sure. Like, obviously, if you really like an exotic plant, and there's nothing wrong with planting exotics, but also consider planting native plants so that our native species have a place to land and get a little snack. If you can, skip pesticides and herbicides because, again, these species are very fragile and they are sensitive to these things. So if you have the ability to skip things like pesticides and herbicides, it's recommended, or at least maybe reduce your use of them. And lastly, volunteer or donate. So volunteering your time or donating money to the causes that are most important to you, whether that be conservation efforts, whether that be education efforts, whether that be, I know you can like adopt different animals at different zoos and aquariums, you know, donating money to those places. Anything that really strikes a chord with you, I think is the way to go. So whatever is something that you feel like you can do matters, even if it's just a drop in the bucket. The more drops that we can get, the more the bucket fills. So I think that every little bit counts, and it's important to contribute where you can. And also don't stress if you can't. So it's not the end of the world if you can't do any of these things right now. That's not a big deal. And I think it's important to also have some grace with yourself and the others around you, that we're all trying to do our best. That may look different for some people, and that's okay. With that, we conclude our episode of butterflies. So again, I don't want to make every topic have some deep, depressing message. Not even depressing, but I just don't, or I'm not trying to make every rabbit hole that I go down something that is super heavy and serious. I think that it's important to understand these heavier topics and maybe learn a little bit more. But I also think it's important to have some fun. So even if you just pick up the book Fallen Stones and give it a read, I think you would enjoy it and maybe you'll learn something. It's a really nice book. It's a really fun book. It's not too heavy, I don't think. And so if you want to read that, great. If you don't want to read that, that's fine too. Maybe plant some native plants around your house. I recently got into gardening within the last couple years and I love it. I have found my hobby. You know what I mean? Like that one hobby that just really makes you happy. I enjoy gardening. I would encourage, if you've never tried gardening, I would encourage you to try it. And if you think that you're bad at it, no, you're not. Because literally all it is you make mistakes and you learn from those mistakes and then you just can do better in the future. And it's not that serious. Plants are really awesome. They need water, soil, sun. That's it. So even if you mess one of those things up, plants are incredibly resilient. And if you watch them, they'll tell you when something's wrong. So, you know, droopy leaves, yellow, turning yellow, whatever, you can Google and kind of figure out and tweak it. And as you make mistakes, you learn more about it. And so I would encourage you to give it a try if you've ever considered it and see how it goes. And it's okay if you kill everything that you try to plant, because at the end of the day, it's still a learning experience and you can always try again. And once again, it doesn't have to be that serious. So anyway, I hope that you all have a great rest of your day and a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next Friday. Bye!